Hi, today is January 14, 2017. This is Mobile News Podcast number 190, the happy 10th birthday to iPhone edition. I'm Todd Ogasawara, my good friend John Westfall. And before we get started, I want to thank John Westfall for recommending Pencil by Paper from Paper by 53. That's hard to say. Pencil from Paper by 53, which is a Bluetooth pencil for the iPad. I wonder if it works at iOS and iPhone. But anyway, last week I was mentioning to John that I've been doodling a lot lately using the Apple Pencil on my iPad Pro Junior. But unfortunately, the Apple Pencil does not support the iPad Mini 4. So I asked John for his recommendations for a suitable alternative for the iPad Mini. He suggested the Pencil by from Paper by 53, which doesn't look anything like the Apple Pencil. I mean, you know, I've seen it before, so I knew that. But it was fortunately fairly inexpensive. The Apple Pencil is like $100. And while this Pencil by Paper is normally $60, it's $30 on Amazon. The only disappointing thing is I ordered the wood grain finish, which has a magnet that sticks to the smart cover on the iPad. But unfortunately, they shipped me like what looks like a gold metallic version, which I believe doesn't, oddly enough, the wooden version has a magnet and the metal version doesn't. So, you know, go figure that one out. But at this point, I'm okay. You know, I'm not sure I would really want to trust a magnet sticking on a smart cover as a way to securely transport this pencil anyway. But anyway, thanks, John, and I'm looking forward to doodling on my iPad Mini now.
You sound skeptical that magnets near a magnetic cover could be as magnetically awesome, and I share that. I don't think, even though I have the version that has the magnet, I don't think I have actually ever used the magnet to hold on to a smart cover and just throw it in my bag. I actually, because the Pencil by 53 or by Papers by whatever, yeah, the pencil, since it looks like an artist's drawing pencil, mm-hmm, I just kind of put it in with my regular stuff when I carry it. So,
okay, and it does come with spare rubber tips and things. So,
mm-hmm,
so it's, you know, if you do damage it, you don't have to like order something right away.
Yeah,
we'll see how.
And you can order those tips as well, obviously. So.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to playing with it since I've been, as I don't know if I said this in a podcast last week, but I know I mentioned to John that my New Year's resolution has been to do a daily doodle. As I mentioned to John, some have been less than spectacular. Others have been not great, but good enough to share with friends. But hopefully I'll improve. If you do a couple hundred of these, presumably you will improve over time. So I'm hoping I will improve over time.
That's what I've been told, but my drawing has never much improved over time. In fact, it's become the running joke with things like my Christmas card that my drawing is not really all that good, and I embrace that. My parents were both artists.
Is that right?
They are both artists. Yeah, my father drew line art for advertising circulars in the 70s, and that's how he got into advertising. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how he got into advertising and then into sales. And my mother had a partial scholarship to art school when she was in high school, but didn't have enough money for the other half of the tuition. So, yeah, both my parents have backgrounds in art, and I cannot draw anything with any kind of realism or any my drawings are just horrible. That's all I can really say. So, yeah, my parents don't like to talk a lot about my artistic ability, but
so apparently it's not genetic.
No, it is not genetic at all. But you know, artistic ability is kind of like that. You can practice and you can get better. I remember years ago I was watching a DVD that was a Family Guy special features on the DVD, and it was how to draw certain Family Guy characters. And so I went through and I looked how to draw, I think, Stewie or something like that, and I actually came up with a halfway decent Stewie. So, you know, it's possible to do, but it doesn't come naturally, unfortunately.
Okay, so here's a trick I have been told. I've not tried it myself, But here's a trick I've been told to try to improve your drawing. If you're trying to draw something in the real world versus something from imagination, is take a picture or photo of something and turn it upside down relative to you and draw it upside down. You know, basically draw what you see. So it's the upside down thing.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's supposed to reduce sort of the preconceived notion of what it is you're looking at, like a person or dog or tree or whatever. And, you know, you draw what you see versus drawing what your brain is filtering, or your mind is filtering to you, what you think you see. But anyway, I have not tried that yet.
At this point, I'm curious if I even know what a dog looks like. So, you know, that could be the problem, that I'm just not aware of what an animal actually does look like that I'm trying to draw. So,
and that's the idea, right? You're just...
Yeah, so, I'm doing well at this already.
Yeah. All right. So getting into the rest of our show list today, the first one I think we both found interesting, is that Consumer Reports retracted its negative recommendation of the new MacBook Pro models based on battery life. So I've got a link to Consumer Reports. It says Consumer Reports now recommends MacBook Pro is basically the title. And I've got a link to that in the show notes. I'll put that up on a blog when that comes up. Your thoughts on that? Because I went to go look at the MacBook Pro yesterday, and I'm still not impressed.
Well, I don't find this all that amazing. I was worried. Okay, so Apple is obviously in the business of making good products. They wouldn't have gotten where they are if they were just some kind of hit-and-miss company. They tend to hit more than they miss. So this seemed like something that had to have been a bug or a test issue or something strange. And obviously, you know, I've never gotten the same results in real-world use as you see reported in testing by Consumer Reports and places. So I figured something would come out of it. What I am happy to see is that once it was discussed and, yeah, this is a bug, whatever, Consumer Reports reran things and they were happy and they retracted it. I was a bit worried that Consumer Reports was just going to kind of stick to their guns and say, nope, it's horrible and we're not recommending it, which would have screamed kind of favoritism, you know, in my mind, that they just figured, oh, good, we can ding Apple on something, right, you know, that they missed. So, yeah, I think it's nice to know that Consumer Reports will be responsive to a company that says, hey, we think there might have been a problem with the test. Can we work on this and work together instead of kind of have an adversarial relationship? Of course, I don't know. There might have been someone in the background that had some pull that got this done as well. But I like the idea that maybe someone can step back and go, okay, our first tests were wrong. We're going with this now. We can change our mind.
Yeah, it is admirable. You know, a lot of people, as you say, just become very defensive when you probe their findings, beliefs, whatever you want to call it. So good on Consumer Reports. You know, they have a pretty good rep. I know a lot of people say, well, I don't really think much of Consumer Reports, you know, computer type analyses. But hey, in this case, they, you know, whether or not you agree to the first test results, they did go back, retest it, and said, hey, we were wrong. We now switched from no to yes. So good on them. I still don't like the MacBook Pro.
It's really interesting. So one of our mutual friends, Jason Dunn, wrote a blog piece this week about his MacBook Pro that he picked up. He picked up the one with the touch bar and all that, which Jason, for a long time, was a Windows user. He was actually took a lot of shots at Apple in the past.
Yeah.
And he has actually kind of a very nuanced opinion of Apple now, where he is kind of saying, yeah, they're doing this really well. This is really good. Yeah. Oh, this is not very well. He has a whole series of blog posts that detailed his experiences with his iMac that he bought last year.
Right, and likes, as I recall.
Yeah, that he's owned for over a year now and likes. So, you know, really just use the tool that works for you. That's what I've always said, and I'll talk more about that toward the end of the podcast when we talk about what we want to see in 2017.
Yeah, so basically the reason I went to go take a look at the MacBook Pro is my daughter was with me. She's heading back to college tomorrow, actually, flying out tomorrow. But we headed over to the Apple Store yesterday. I took the day off, and did a bunch of stuff, and we both looked at MacBook Pro, and she just kind of looked at it for like 5 seconds, and nope. And went over to look at the current model of MacBook Air.
Yeah. I think that's going to be the reaction for at least about another year by people who are diehard regular users. Power users and geeks are, you know, I think apprehensively going, yeah, USB-C, I kind of see that that's where I want to go. And as I said before, I think we, as power users, forget the actual use scenarios that most people find themselves in. Most people with a laptop, if they're out and about working, they're not plugging in a bunch of peripherals. They're sitting at a coffee shop, they open the lid, they do some work, they close it up, and then they go back to their office, and that's where they have all their peripherals. It makes sense that I'd want those all plugged into one thing, like a dock, that I could just plug one other, you know, end cable in, just like the days of yore when we had docking stations.
Yeah. I still have that, one.
Yeah.
I have one for my service
phone. That is definitely something that if you tell a power user and a geek you can't have all those ports built in, they cry and scream and kick because they don't have that mentality anymore of a docking station. My parakeets agree.
Yeah. Vociferously, I believe. It's the word. I just want the deal killer for her was the lack of an SD card slot. As I mentioned earlier in the discussion of the new MacBook Pro, the lack of the SD card slot is a killer. I mean, yeah, you can plug in a USB. No, you can't actually, because you'd need a USB-C dongle. I don't even know where you buy one of those. I assume you can get it on Amazon. But, you know, even though we both have USB SD card readers and so forth, they don't work on a new MacBook Pro, at least not without an adapter or a replacement. So, you know, just one more thing to buy, one more thing to lose.
I have a very strange attitude when it comes to SD card readers, and that's because I've had hellaciously bad luck with them in the past, built in on laptops. Both one of my laptops and one of my wife's laptops that had a built-in SD card reader, it worked like one time and then it broke.
Oh.
So, you know, I guess I've never really gotten in the habit of using SD cards on my laptop. Although I do have, for my MacBook Pro, the 2015 version, I have one of those SD card holders that holds a micro SD and kind of sits flush in the case. So I have an extra 128 gigs of storage off of that micro SD. So I am using my SD card right now on my MacBook, but I'm not using it for swapping in and out cards. I'm using it for some semi-permanent storage.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on from that, since I think I've probably beaten the fact I don't like the new MacBook Pro to death. Speaking of Apple, happy birthday, not quite happy birthday, but happy birthday to the announcement of the original iPhone 10 years ago on January 9th, 2007. A classic presentation by Steve Jobs, I think everybody agrees. Mm-hmm. I kind of rewatched part of it, you know, the part where he introduces the iPhone itself. You know, it's a computer, it's an internet communicator, it's a whatever. It was just a classic presentation. It's hard to think of anything that is better before or since, actually, when introducing a new tech product, at least, or any product. I've never really seen many other kind of products announced, but that was spectacular. And let's see, so when did you not switch to an iPhone, but when did you first use an iPhone after that announcement?
I first used one, I guess it was probably, you and I were both MVPs at the time, or it was right before I became an MVP. And so I think the first time I got to play with one was probably a friend of mine had one. I don't even think he had the original. I think he had the 3G. And so I played with that. So I went a whole year probably without actually playing with one. Now I had a, no, I didn't have an iPod Touch at the time because they weren't out yet either. So it took a while before I started playing with one. And then I bought a 3GS to kind of play with in 2010 or so. And then my first daily driver iPhone was an iPhone 4S that I used for about 2 months. Then I upgraded to the 5, I upgraded to the 6 Plus, and now I'm on the 7 Plus.
Oh, interesting. So I took a slightly earlier path, although I wasn't an early adopter. So when I first saw the iPhone at $600 and $700, I just thought, and this is back when phones were typically subsidized. I just thought that was an insane amount to pay for a phone of any kind. It didn't have apps yet, so I thought, what's the deal with that? But it did, and it didn't have GPS. Of course, very few phones had a GPS back then. But it did have what looked to be a pretty darn good camera compared to everything else, which is terrible, quite frankly, in retrospect. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of put it away. I actually, the next year, I think in 2008, I bought the first T-Mobile G1 Android phone. Returned that in 2 weeks and bought a 3G. Because the battery was so bad on the G1, at least for me. In fact, I remember our friend Frank McPherson, who's, you know, been a devoted Android user since the G1, you know, acknowledged the battery issues, but basically bought a giant battery pack for his G1 to keep it alive during the day. And I was not quite willing to do that. I just wanted a phone that didn't need sort of life support during the day. So, anyway, I didn't switch. I was still using a Windows mobile phone or a Windows phone until 2012, I think. All through 2012, I still used a Windows phone.
Yeah, I had a Windows. The last Daily Driver Windows phone I was on was probably the Dash 3G, the HTC Maple, was the last one that I used for more than a couple of days, and that was in early 2009. Wow. Well, mid 2009. And then about mid 2009 is where I made the switch to Android. And I was on Android until 2012. Yeah, 2012 October. So now I've been on iPhone for almost 5 years. So
it's
interesting how fast time goes.
It is. And Apple, as I think we talked about last week, had its first like revenue drop or profit drop. Well, anyway. Tim Cook didn't make his numbers and actually got a 15% pay cut, so he got a bazillion dollars instead of multiple bazillion dollars in salary.
Yeah, he went to $8 million only.
That's right, because, you know, you can hardly make ends meet with $8 million
a year. I assume that, we joke about that, but I assume that once you start living the lifestyle of someone who makes seven figures a year, seven or eight years a year, you really do start to notice those differences. As crazy as it sounds, I assume you might, but I don't think there's much love lost for the fact that, you know, he's not making as much as he could. And Tim Cook seems like the kind of guy who honestly would not look at us and say, you should feel sorry for me.
No, I don't think so either. But, you know, on the other hand, Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in the world, I think lives fairly modestly considering he's one of the probably five richest men in the world.
The same house that apparently he's owned since the 60s or 70s. And, right. Yeah. And money doesn't have to change you. It's nice to have the option for it to change.
And I think he has a nice car, but it's not, you know, it's not a super fancy Ferrari or Maserati or anything. And I think I remember reading a year or two ago, he sent his car was 10 years old. You know, he doesn't change cars every year. Probably how he became a multi-bazillionaire in the first place. So he sent his daughter, you know, who's an adult, of course. He sent his daughter to the car dealership and had her negotiate a good price for a new car and traded in the old one. So, you know. Okay.
It's interesting to think about, but 10 years, I think the iPhone is still going to, do you think the iPhone will still be around in 10 years?
No, I don't.
I think it will.
You think it will? Okay. I think Android phones will still be around in 10 years, only because there are so many manufacturers, but I think the iPhone probably, on its current trajectory, unless they do something, I don't know what they could do, honestly, I don't have any suggestions, but unless they do something, I think 5-6 years, tops.
Okay. Well, on Mobile Views Podcast 752,
we'll
look back on this and see what happened.
Right, we'll mark this. Todd predicts by, let's see, this is 2017, so 2023, iPhones will be kind of where BlackBerry is now. Which is...
Okay, I'm writing it down in our show notes.
Okay. BlackBerry Windows phones, it'll be about... BlackBerry Windows Phone, basically the 1% of the market. Okay. Actually, less than 2027. I'm predicting 6 years, but that's okay.
Okay. What? You want to go 6 years.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
2023.
So 2023. All right. And I will. So I have written in our show notes, Todd predicts iPhones in 2023 will be where BlackBerry Windows Phone is in 2017. And because I don't play fair, or less than 1% of the market, because I don't play fair, I'm going to write John doesn't.
Okay, fair enough.
So now we have set up a situation where as long as they don't hit 1% of the
market,
right.
I can. If they're 1.5%, you still win.
Exactly. I don't play fair.
Okay. Next up on the show notes, Windows. I know you're not running. I don't think you're running Insider Build. I'm running Insider Build on a small Dell Venue 8 tablet. But Windows 10 Insider Build 15002 was released. I just upgraded last night. I haven't tried anything on it. Not sure I can actually run a lot of this stuff, actually, since it's a, you know, it's basically a tiny tablet, not a full desktop or full notebook for that matter. Got a bunch of new features, some of which I'm pretty sure work, like a new feature in the start menu, which brings back something from Windows 7, that's folders in the start menu. Looking forward to taking a look at that. They've got something called a set-aside Edge browser tab. So if you've got, like, you know, a bunch of tabs, and you want to kind of get a fresh, clean look on your browser just to kind of, you know, sometimes you just need that, right? Not to see a bazillion tabs open. Apparently, there's some way to set aside the collection of tabs you have now, start fresh with one single tab, and then go back to that set of browser tabs you had open. Not sure how that works, but I'm looking forward to it. One I'm really looking forward to, well, I'm not sure I'm going to try it since my Bluetooth keyboard is broken. I guess I'll have to use another Bluetooth keyboard with my test device. And that's Win plus Shift plus S key. If you press all three of those at once, it'll do a screen copy of a screen region, which you used to be able to kind of do with a Control-Alt-Delete to a whole window copy, or actually a whole desktop display copy. That is gone in Windows 10, I think. And you need to use the Snip tool to do copying, which is kind of a hassle because basically it's an app. So you got to launch the app, you know, blah, blah, blah. If it's not launched, you know, it takes a couple extra seconds to start it. So Win Shift S in the new preview build, 15002. And let's see, quick virtual machine creation, Hyper-V. I don't think I can use Hyper-V on a machine with only 2 gigs of RAM. I guess you can, but it wouldn't be much good. Maybe a tiny version of Linux or something as a test. I'll see if that's possible. I'm also running the 32-bit version of Windows instead of 64-bit. That's just stupid. I didn't realize the Atom is 64-bit when I installed it. But most excitingly, the blue screen of death is gone because it's now green.
Well, you got to change these things up every so often. Jassad.
I like blue. Green, not so excited about. Red would have been interesting, you know. So red screen of death would have been, I don't know, more desirable. But anyway.
Well,
go ahead.
I am not running Insider Build. I just enabled developer mode yesterday so that I could get the bash shell up and running, which I haven't played around yet, but I did want to try that. So yeah, I kind of am very hesitant to do much with my Surface Pro just because it's my work machine, so I really don't want to have a problem with it. I thought about maybe this year, if Microsoft releases a new Surface, picking up a Surface Pro that would be my home machine, but
it is a nice
machine. We shall see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I should note that, you know, since you haven't used the bash shell yet in Windows 10, it's really a misnomer. You know, it's really Linux. It really is Ubuntu Linux in there. It's got everything you could possibly want in Linux, including Python and also in BC-L and all that stuff built in. So, you know, for people who think it's kind of like the command prompt where you've got this, you know, just a scripting ability. No, you can run real live apps that you download from, you know, a repository like you do in any other Linux box. So it's it is really nice. I often have my bash shell open, just like I have a bash shell open on the Mac most of the time, a terminal window open. Just because it's so darn handy to have basically a Linux window sitting open for me to run stuff. Mostly BC-L, you know, the calculator. It is awesome.
Well, I will start playing around with that this week probably, and let you know my thoughts.
All right. So last up are kind of things we want to see for the rest of 2017. So what do you want to see? I'm looking at your list now, and I kind of agree with some. Some I don't even know about. I'll ask you about that. So go ahead.
Okay. So I want an Apple refresh of the Mac Mini.
Mm.
My home server is a Mac Mini, and it's given me something I've really wanted and took a number of years to get a system going that I liked, and that is a home server that doesn't take up a lot of space, lets me VPN into my home network, stream content. So I have an Apple TV, so I just have an iTunes library open on the Mac Mini that I stream movies and other content from. So really, this Mac Mini is now almost 7 years old. It's wow. a 2010. It needs an upgrade. It is slow beyond belief, even by server standards. So really would like an upgrade on the or an update on the Mac Mini, and then I will purchase it and migrate over. Thankfully, I've started doing this crazy storage system where I have a bunch of external hard drives, laptop external hard drives plugged into the Mac Mini. So my migration should be pretty easy to do. But, you know, need the new Mac Mini first to do that.
Yeah, and on a related note, my last remaining desktop PC died yesterday. I was about to back up some of my daughter's photos to it, and it just wouldn't boot. I think I know what the problem is. I think it's basically just the RAM went bad, but I'm debating, you know, whether or not it's worth the effort to spend money to replace the RAM only to find out it's something else, or to buy a new desktop PC, which isn't that expensive these days, so I need to think about that too.
It's given up on you. It just it doesn't want to see your photos anymore.
Yeah.
You have a happy family life and friends, no family. It's depressing.
And to be fair, you know, the desktop PC I bought in August of 2008, I remember that vividly because I bought it when I became a full-time blog writer for a very short but blissful time. and I thought I needed a new desktop. So, you know, it's pretty old. It's you know, what, 8 years old, I guess. No, sorry. It's 9 years old. Almost 9 years old. 8 and a half, something like that. So it deserves a retirement. I should, you know, from an amortized point of view, I got my money's worth out of it. No complaints.
So the next thing I want is I am sick and tired of all the Siri hate out there. And I don't necessarily disagree with it. I think Siri needs to do some things better. And Apple, I'm asking, when you refresh the Mac Mini, also make Siri on par with Cortana and, well, all the ones that we came up with names with for last week. Right. I forget what they all were.
Right.
But make it on par with those so that we don't have a substandard Siri. Siri works as well as Siri did 3 years ago. But it needs to work as well as it should today.
Actually, if Siri worked as well as it did before Apple bought it, that would be good. Because it had a lot more features before Apple bought it and kind of dumbed it down.
That's true. That would be good as well.
Yeah.
My next, this is a niche thing I would want to see, yeah, and I don't know how.
I don't even know what this is.
So to do, the number two and then the word do, so and all is one word, so three characters, to D-O.
Right.
Is the to-do list app that I use on my iPhone and on my Mac, and I'm very happy with it on my iPad. It allows, you know, it's kind of a full-featured to-do setup. You can do some tasks and collections of tasks and checklists and all these other things. It syncs over three or four different platforms. Mm-hmm. The one that it has the best support for is Dropbox, and I just want a Windows client for it.
Mm.
They have, so somewhere on their blog, if you do a search for to-do Windows, in 2010 or 2012, they did mention that they had, you know, started working on one or thinking about one or doing something with one. I would really, really hope that maybe they pick that up this year because I have been very happy with to-do and I don't want to switch away just to get cross-platform support. But now that I'm on Windows more, it's kind of a pain every time I need to open a new task or something like that. My phone or an iPad, or even though I have Mac computers pretty much everywhere I'm working as well, I want it on the Surface.
Now, how much does To-Do cost on the various platforms that you do have it on so far?
Right now, so they actually just changed their pricing model. to the point that they kind of have a base amount of features for free in the app now. And for sync and backup and a few other things, there's an in-app purchase that enables those. And it's not a, it's not unreasonable. It's less than $10. I want to say it's somewhere in the $4.99 to $9.99 range on the iPhone, iPad.
Is that a permanent purchase, or do you have to like annually subscribe to it?
That is a permanent purchase, I'm pretty sure.
That's a good deal.
Let me double check this because I don't want to give out misinformation. But their website, if anyone's interested, is doapp.com. So to do app. Their price for the Apple version is pricey. It's $49.99 if you want it on your MacBook.
Right.
That is a little bit pricier than what people might want to pay for it. But the iOS version is actually very reasonable, I think. Let me pull up what the iOS in-app purchase is. This is, I shouldn't just start talking about something I like. I should have research on it. Oh, am I back now?
Yes.
Cool. Let me see what the iOS version is. Oh, they have an Android version as well, I should point out.
Okay.
So they are cross-platform with Android. iOS is... Oh, they also have an Apple Watch. Oh, and they also will do an email to do Gateway. That's an additional cost that is something like $1.99 to enable. Mm. Pro... for them is $19.99 on iOS, and that's a one-time purchase.
That's a pretty good deal, because for Evernote, you'd be paying, I don't know what it is nowadays, $40, $50 a year. Of course, you could probably get a lot more features, but it might be overkill for somebody who just wants a to-do list.
Well, and the thing that really makes to-do killer for me is the customizability. You can have different smart lists that base themselves off of different criteria you set. So kind of like smart playlists in iTunes. This is smart lists for these. And also, this is a really stupid feature, but I love it, and I won't use an option to-do list that doesn't have it. It can hide future tasks. So tasks that the start date hasn't been reached yet, because I'm the kind of person, I like to put all my tasks in there, but I don't want to see that in 6 months I have to renew something or I have to do something. I'd like that hidden until I can actually take action on it in 6 months.
Right. And I'm just checking something. Speaking of to-dos and... so apparently there's a new update for the iOS version that's coming out, version 8.0. Current version is 7.18.1. They're supposed to add a whole bunch of new features, so maybe we can talk about that after it's released. I saw something on Twitter from Evernote about some kind of a chat or something you're going to have with users to discuss it. Going on with your list.
So really, it seems weird, but those are my only real three things I want in 2017. I've actually gotten most of the stuff I've wanted over the last few years. AirPods was something we talked about quite a bit.
Yep.
I have a good working setup now. So this week I started using the Surface Pro 4 in the classroom and at one of my desks full time. So it's a quick setup. I can walk into a room and be up and running usually within a minute or so, which is faster than having to log into the computer in the room. I have a reliable VPN and home streaming system thanks to the Mac Mini server. So I'm fairly happy. I would just like to do for Windows, a better Siri, and a new Mac Mini.
Right. And since you mentioned your AirPods, I just want to note that before the podcasting recording started, John actually had his AirPods on. I asked him to use his AirPods to record a podcast, but we ran into a technical glitch, which he's researching, that may be related to AirPods. And quite honestly, it's interesting. You know, the $150 AirPods, which does not have a microphone near your mouth, as for obvious reasons, it sounded a little bit kind of hollow compared to just the $30 earbuds that come with the earphone that John's using right now. So it's probably a good solution for those of you who hate that strap around your neck when you're running around with talking on a phone or listening to podcasts or whatever. But sound quality wise, at least, as John points out, the microphone on the the earbuds that come with the iPhone, the mic is nearer your mouth versus, you know, trying to wrap around. So you actually get better sound from it.
Yeah, and I will say that I've been using the AirPods pretty much daily and have had no complaints. They're what they are. They're not going to give you great audio. They'll give you passable phone audio and things like that. So people who've talked to me haven't said anything like, oh, I can't hear you or you don't sound that good.
Right.
I've used it with Skype on the phone. I've used it with regular phone calls, no problems. But, you know, they're not going to give you as good as wired with a microphone right in front of your face.
Yep, yep, absolutely. So just something to think about for folks who are considering buying it. You know, consider your use case is basically you're, you know, 90% of the time you're on the phone talking to people or just listening, in which case there's no, it's probably better than your earbuds.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's probably fine if you got $160 to spend. I forget how much it costs.
$159.
Yeah, not cheap. Okay, so my list, also pretty short, really. Good, inexpensive, touch-enabled Chromebook with Android support. Now, you remember last year my quest for the Acer Chromebook R13 ended in failure because A, Amazon won't ship it to Hawaii and Alaska, and B, I'm too lazy to actually drive 2 miles to Best Buy from my office. Actually, I think it's less than 2 miles. Maybe it's a mile. I'm 1 mile from my office to go pick one up. So, and I should note, Acer actually offered to loan me one to play with. And I said, no, I'm going to buy it. And I never did. So sorry about that, Acer. But anyway, the Acer is pretty close. It's, I think, $400 for a pretty decent version. I'm kind of hoping to pay more, $300. But, you know, understand, touchscreens are not cheap. Waiting for the Samsung Chromebook Plus or Pro to be available for sale. Hopefully, although I bet you Amazon doesn't ship those to Hawaii either. And the reason I'm looking at those two models right now is that although the Acer R13 looks terrific, and I still think it looks terrific, apparently Google worked directly with Samsung to develop these hopefully non-explosive Chromebooks. And so I want to see what it is that is unique about it, aside from a stylus, which I find kind of interesting because, as I mentioned several times now, I've been doodling a lot. Or not a lot, actually, 3 to 10 minutes a day, which is more than zero, so a lot in that terms. But at any rate,
that's a lot more than I am.
Yeah. So looking forward to, I'm really hoping for something in the $250, $300 range, but these I think are more like $500, which is kind of expensive, and I'm not going to pull a trigger immediately after I see it, unless I get a good deal on it, especially since I have to now go buy a new desktop to replace my now broken desktop PC. And the other thing I'm looking forward to or hoping to see, although I don't think I will, is a new iPad mini with pencil support. And I say that not because I don't think Apple's unwilling to support a pencil in the iPad mini. I don't think they're going to come out with a new iPad mini. I think the 4 may be the last of the line, and that will be very sad.
Yeah, I worry about the same thing with the iPad mini. I use mine all the time. It's probably the iPad I use the most.
Yep, me too.
But it doesn't seem like it's getting a lot of love from Apple these days.
No, very unfortunate. In fact, let's see, in 2016, did iPad mini 4 come out in 2016? No, it came out in 2015, right? I think it came out like... late 2015. So there was no new iPad mini in 2016 at all. Whereas the iPad... the regular size one got kind of a refresh. The iPad Pro 9.7-inch, which I called iPad Pro Junior, came out in, I think, the spring of 2016. So that got refreshed. So, yeah, their refresh cycle on iPads is really weird because the iPad Pro came out in 2015, got no new update in 2016, same as the iPad Mini 4, but at least there was a new iPad-sized device. So, anyway, Apple is a very confusing update strategy these days.
Yeah, they are very confused in a number of ways these days. So that's why I think both of us are hoping that this year is the year that Apple gets their act together a little bit.
One can only hope. At any rate, that is all I have for this one. And perhaps as we resynchronize our schedules for the new calendar year, we'll see if any of our friends can make it on with us. I know a couple of our friends bought the Google Home... whatever it's called. I think Google Home, right? The Amazon Echo competitor. I think Frank bought one. few other, I think Sven might have bought one. So, well, Sven buys everything. So,
somebody we know owns it somewhere. Somebody we know
bought one of those things.
And we will track them down and get them on the podcast. Right. And I will give a shout out to one of my friends, Michael Kohler, who just, or Taylor, decided to start listening to our podcast. So he said he was judging us silently from behind the earbuds of the world. So, Michael, welcome to the tens of listeners.
That's right. That you might be number 11 now. At least.
Yeah, you might be.
Okay, welcome, and thanks to all our friends who, if I didn't remember to thank them last week, thanks to all our friends who joined us in the podcast 2016, and we're sure to have all of them back and more. We want to bring aboard a bunch of our friends we haven't reached out to because we figured they were too busy or whatever, but we don't really care if you're busy anymore. We're just going to reach out to you anyway. We just don't care.
We'll get to you somehow.
Yeah, yeah. We really don't believe you're that busy, and we think you have time to talk to us.
We think you're long.
Yeah, at any rate, John, thanks as usual for the podcast. So that's, even numbered one. 190 is in the can. Hey, we'll get 200 in a couple of weeks, or a couple of months, I guess. And we'll talk to you.
Let's do something special.
Yep.